Right now, it's a pleasure for me to introduce to you Anna Azizi. And Anna is here to talk about the next CSA performance series offering at the New Hazlett Theater. CSA, in this context, stands for Community Supported Art. It's a series of innovative performances. You might recall we had Brittany Chantel with us a few weeks ago. And the next performance is coming up this Thursday and Friday. It's called The Secret Life of Gym Girls. And Anna, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and how you got to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm actually from Pittsburgh. I grew up in the South Hills, and then I stayed here for school. And now I live in Lawrenceville, and I'm happy to be here.
Here you are.
Here I am.
Where did you go to school?
Carnegie Mellon. I was actually a WRCT person, which Saturday Light Brigade plays on.
That's what your name actually. Did you use your name on the air there?
Yeah. I had a live show.
Actually, your name is familiar to me.
That, that's really funny.
Not just for this reason, but I was wondering why. What did you study at Carnegie Mellon?
I started off in their School of Drama in set design, or really I was there for a year and a half. So I was more just doing general theater tech stuff. And then I switched to a student-defined major where I could take a lot more classes in the School of Fine Arts, which starting to learn what the fine arts school could teach me really, combined with my more of a theater-ish background, I guess, is what brought me to doing performance art.
You must be really, really, really talented because at least from my time at Carnegie Mellon, and I don't think things have changed so much, to be able to combine something from the drama school with something else is not easy to get to be allowed, let alone actually accomplish. Is that still true?
Yeah, since their theater program is a conservatory, so it's very you have to stick to what they have set out. That's actually why I ended up not being able to double major or something, and instead had to just be create my own whole major so I could still take some theater classes and then take the all of the art classes and performance art classes that I was dying to take. So
I did the same thing, raised in Pittsburgh, and decided to stay to go to Carnegie Mellon, and actually stayed after graduation, too. Did you expect to do that? Or I never really set out to do that. It kind of just happened.
Yeah, same. So I grew up in the South Hills, so I didn't come to the actual city that much, and I was actually really bummed I was going to be staying in Pittsburgh because both of my older brothers were living in Boston, and I was I'm staying home, and they live together in Boston. But then after actually coming to the city and meeting all of the amazing artists that are here and the amazing thriving DIY experimental music scene, DIY theater scene, it's exactly where I want to be and what I want to be doing. Those are my people.
That's a really great testament to the community, and I'm glad to hear you say that. And again, I had the same thing, a brother in Chicago, and in fact a brother in Boston, both of whom kind of more or less after high school and going to the University of Chicago and MIT respectively, practically never came back after that. And here I was in Pittsburgh. Well, the production is called The Secret Life of Gym Girls, and Harper Francis is the main character. And you're going to kind of get inside of her head, I guess. Can you explain what folks will see and how the show, it's a one-person show, right?
Yeah, so we'll get inside many characters' heads. So I play all the characters. I'm always one character at a time, physically on stage, but at the same time, there's a cast of digital characters, all also played by me, that I'm interacting with, talking to. There's even a scene where I'm wrestling one of the moms. So the format of the show is there's the four gym girls, their four moms, and their coach, and they all have secret lives that they have to keep from the team.
So four gym girls, moms, and a coach. That's nine characters.
And lots of extras.
And lots of extras. And they're all played by you.
Yeah.
Wow. That's how did you conceive of this?
Well, I started using green screen in school. It was a format that one of my former professors, or a medium that one of my former professors, Angela Washko, introduced me to. And really, whenever I started using green screen and I could play like multiple characters at a time, embody multiple types of people, is when, yeah, I really started getting inspired to work this way. So first I was working just in video, and then I started in another class actually with Susie Silver. I was in like a performance art class. Was my first time making a piece that was like interactive video, where I was a character interacting with environments and people behind me on screen.
That's what I'm thinking about, but I don't know if the question is even answerable, which is harder, pre-filming these pieces in a way that you will confidently be able to interact with them, or adjusting your interaction to meet the pieces. And they're both really different challenges. But that process, what is that like? How do you, is it a lot of trial and error, or what's that like?
Well, with this project and with something of this scale, there's not a whole lot of time for trial and error, unfortunately. So what I've been doing is I get a really tight script down, which is kind of unusual for me. I tend to like to work in a way that's a little looser and a little less planned. But it's been super essential to have a script down, know exactly what each of the characters are going to say versus when I, in front of the screen, I'm going to say something. And just like do my best to get the timing right, and then get the video as good and as tight as I can, and then from there, doing that second hand of things and making sure that my live character is working with the media that I presented myself.
Yeah, I that makes sense. I guess the other characters you can view as actors or musicians that you're playing with. Do you have to resist the temptation to improvise yourself, or have you, when you're live, for you, or have you left places in the show where you can do that?
Yeah, there are definitely places where I can somewhat improvise. At least as far as what exact words I'm saying, but I need to like feel the timing of how long whatever rambling thing or improvised thing I might be saying lasts, so that it's not like all of a sudden I'm getting interrupted by one of my characters, or they like just walk away in the middle of me talking to them or something.
Now the idea, well, there's so many things I want to ask you, but I want to stay technical for a moment. You must. How do you control all of this? Is it easier than one might think? Is it just one? So I picture you on stage and screens that projections are being placed on, and but somebody's got to fire all of these things off and make sure they happen correctly. Or is it, do you have to have a big crew to help you do this, or are you controlling it? How does that happen?
So kind of both. In the past, whenever I've toured already with sections of this show, and whenever I was doing that, it was all just like pre-baked, press play on the computer, and I like have it all memorized.
Okay.
I know the timing. If I have to go do a quick costume change, I just like run backstage, change myself, know that I'll have enough time with just the digital characters by themselves doing stuff for me to get back on stage. However, with this show, now that I have like a theater and Harriet Smith is going to be stage managing and able to queue up videos to play in case I need a little extra space to bring in scenery and or do a costume change, things like that. So while I have done it in the past without any flexibility, I'm excited to, for this show, be able to have a little bit more flexibility with like when changes happen, so I'm not just like behind the whole time.
Did you do gymnastics? I'm sure you've been asked that question in association with this.
Yeah, I did. I competed for 9 years. I think like 7 of those years was like USAG gymnastics, which is like the
big time.
Yeah,
the officially sanctioned, I guess, gymnastics. And there's been no shortage of news stories about the pressure that girls are placed under in that situation, from inner pressures they might feel, as well as from parents and from coaches. So have a lot of the experiences you're documenting, I don't want to paint them all as personal or biographical, but you've had a chance to observe 9 years worth of your own life, plus every person you've interacted with as part of that. And I'm sure people have come forward with stories to share with you. It's a pretty rich topic to explore.
Yeah, definitely. I think especially with this show that I'm presenting, it's very autobiographical. And not all the topics even necessarily have to do specifically with gymnastics, but with queerness, secrecy, things like that, but all based around the fact that, at least for me, and I think for many others that I've spoken to, or others who played similar sports like figure skating or dance or whatever, this kind of pressure to like fit in with the heteronormative space or whatever the pressure might be in the space that you're occupying.
Yeah, it's a very, and I have not, it never was involved with organized sports or leagues or anything like that, but they're all especially, I would think, in gymnastics, my perception would be is that there are a lot of norms you're expected to conform to. Shoot, it even begins with just the size and shape of your body. If you're doing it, I would imagine, in a sanctioned league, you're expected to weigh a certain amount and be of a certain height. You're also expected pretty much to begin at a very young age, right? It's not a field you're going to break into at the age of even 10 or 11, right? You start when you're really young.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up because I've been making work about gymnastics for like the past 3 years. And whenever I first started making work, a lot of it was about that exact topic of like gymnasts expiring or quote unquote like retiring at the age of like 13, whenever puberty starts to set in and your body starts to change and your mind starts to change because all of a sudden you have more awareness of what you're doing, and that creates fear as well as creating like strength and understanding how your body works. But in my experience, I had a coach who was really horrible about figuring out how to work with a gymnast who did have like mental blocks or fear or he was obsessed with working with like the literal, there was like a team of, it's like 6-year-olds who just go to like these conditioning competitions where they just like do crazy feats of strength. And he was super into the extremely young gymnasts.
Just getting them, well, he had
people
that he probably felt that he could mold. And I'm trying to think if there are other sports or, I sport's the right word, that quite have that expiration date phenomenon. I mean, certainly as players age, they sometimes have less skill or less ability to recover from the physicality of it. But I'm not sure I can think of another sport where at the age of 13 you would be considered depleted and no longer able to compete.
Yeah, it's wild. I think that's why it's such an important thing to talk about. Because I also think it's a myth. Because there's a gymnast, Oksana Chitsuvitsina, who in the last Olympics was 41 years old. She's had 3 kids. In 2016, she was still number one ranked on vault. She's going to be in the Tokyo Olympics. I forget where they're having it this year. But she's going to be in the Olympics again this year at 44. And she's killing it. And she is the oldest Olympian that I've heard of, at least the oldest elite gymnast that I've heard of. And she's extremely successful, and she's not injured or broken. But I think that the way that gymnasts are trained is to kind of like set us up to not expect ourselves to be anything less than like just broken and expired once we're like 18. I definitely remember like joking with my coach and my friends and stuff that like we're all going to have bad backs before we're like out of high school and
What a horrible way to set yourself up mentally, because you're going to extend that to other aspects of your life too, right?
Totally.
It would be hard not to think that if this is true of something I'm passionate about, like gymnastics, and a lot of people, most people in any sport are going to be very passionate about that. You're going to want to apply that to other aspects of your life too, and it permeates you. This is Anna Azizi, who we're speaking with in her upcoming one-person show. It's The Secret Life of Gym Girls, and it takes place Thursday, December 5th, and Friday, December 6th, at the new Hazlett Theater at 8 o'clock as part of the community-supported art performance series. We've linked to the show on our website. You can get more information there. We just have another minute or so. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else? Where do you think you'll go with this after this coming Thursday and Friday?
Yeah, I really want to bring it on tour. So I've toured a lot of times with different scales of DIY projects, but this is my first time having like a full-scale theater production, and I'd love to find more places to bring it to.
Well, excellent. And anything else you'd like to mention that I may not have had a chance to ask you about?
I definitely want to give a big thank you to everyone who's been helping me on this. I have a choir who's been singing these lullabies that I wrote about gymnastics. We have rehearsal later today. Harriet Smith has been doing amazing work as the stage manager and assistant director. Bree McCann has been helping me with a ton of props and is going to be stagehand. And my brother, Jacob Rosati, is doing a ton of the sound design.
You got him in.
Awesome. I know.
Well, it's all at the new Hazlett Theater. It's the seventh year for CSA, Community Supported Art. Anna Azizi, thanks for
being
with us today.